Today on Peace Talks Radio, how attention is a limited resource and what practical steps we can take to reclaim it.
The stress that we experience throughout the day carries over into our personal lives in the evening. We can't just stop work at 5 or 6 p.m. and then go home and expect that we will be rejuvenated. No, we have to think about rejuvenation throughout the day.
And Student Voices takes center stage, offering fresh takes on resolving conflict and creating belonging.
Peace means no big arguments and everybody's happy.
Just being calm and peaceful.
I think peace means no fighting.
Coming up on Peace Talks Radio. This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Whether it's the search for inner peace, harmony in our closest relationships, or understanding in our workplaces, schools, neighborhoods, and beyond, we explore it here on Peace Talks Radio. From personal moments to global movements, we consider what it takes to build a more peaceful world. I'm Jessica Tickton. In a world where our attention is constantly under siege by alerts, apps, deadlines, and digital noise, what does it mean to find peace of mind? And how does our fractured attention impact our personal relationships, our productivity, and our sense of inner calm? In the first part of this program, we explore the connection between attention, digital life, and psychological well-being with Dr. Gloria Mark, a professor in the Computer Science Department at UC Irvine and author of the book Attention Span, a groundbreaking way to restore balance, happiness, and productivity. And in part two of our program today, if you want to know what the future of peace sounds like, ask a 10-year-old or a high schooler training to be a diplomat. That's exactly what we did, coming up later today. Now, let's hear from Dr. Mark, who has spent decades researching how technology shapes our attention.
What is the connection between our attention span and our health and happiness?
That is such an important question. And thank you, Jessica, for having me on. So there's a big connection, because when we feel peaceful inside, we're able to focus. And the converse is that when we're stressed, it interferes with our ability to focus, right? And so we need to find ways to make ourselves sort of calm down, slow down, be reflective, be more deliberate in what we're thinking and the information we're processing. Now, there's a psychological connection, so this is more of a scientific connection. People have a limited amount of cognitive resources. So you can think of it like a tank. That's the metaphor that I like to use. And a lot of things we do during the day drains that tank. So if you're trying to focus for long periods of time, or if you're multitasking, which means shifting your attention rapidly, it drains your tank. And of course, we have emotional resources too that get drained, and we use these resources to regulate our emotions, right? So when we rest our minds, it gives us a chance to build those resources up. And when we have this full tank of resources, we can think more clearly, we can be better engaged, we can regulate our emotions, we can regulate our attention. So there's a very strong connection there.
How do you tell people how to regulate that throughout the day? But if you could like talk me through that.
Sure. So first of all, consider that everyone has their own personal rhythm of attention. This is what we found in our research. So it's not like we can pay full attention throughout the entire day, but our attention ebbs and flows. It waxes and wanes depending on how much resources we have available. So one of the first things everyone can do is discover when your peak attention times are. And that's easy to do. You can do it by, you know, keep a diary for a few days and note down periodically when you feel like your attention is at its peak, you can do it more formally. There are ways I mentioned in the book how you could do it in a more formal way. But that's just kind of an overview. For myself, my attention peaks, I would say mid-morning, a little before mid-morning. And then, you know, I take a nice break for lunch, and then it peaks again in mid-afternoon. And arrange to do those things that are the hardest tasks during those times when your attention is at its peak, right? You don't want to waste those times by going on social media or doing your email, but use those times when you really need to be most productive. So that's one thing that's really important. We pay attention according to what our goals are. So if my goal is to finish a piece of writing, that's what I pay attention to. If my goal is, well, I'm curious about the news, then of course you go and check the news, right? That's where your attention is directed. But we found in our research that when people state their goals the night before, and then they reaffirm them the next morning, they're more likely to stick to their goals longer. But of course, you have to keep being reminded of your goals because goals can slip so fast. Now, I also emphasize that there's two kinds of goals. There are task goals, of course. We have task goals. We have to get work done. But there are also emotional goals. And it's really important to think about what is your emotional goal for the day. So for me, my emotional goal is I want to feel fulfilled. I want to feel positive at the end of the day. Some days I want to feel peaceful. I want to feel, you know, relaxed and peaceful and, you know, that everything is working the way it should. So having an emotional goal is really important because your mind thinks of that, right? And it helps you adjust your behavior to reach that goal. Another thing that people can do is to practice what's called forethought, which is thinking about your future self at the end of the day. So you can imagine how do you want to be and really visualize it. Really have a concrete visualization. Maybe you want to see yourself sitting on the couch and reading a book, or sitting on the couch being with your partner or your family. That would be imagining your future self. And that's a very powerful motivator to help keep us on track when we keep thinking about where we want to be at the end of the day. Where we don't want to be, and I've been there many times, is still working on that deadline, and it's 10 p.m. at night. That is not where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And so it really helps keep us on track to think of that.
So I think like what you're saying in terms of those emotional goals and how we don't maybe pay attention to how we're draining those resources is so important for conflict resolution. If what you want to provide for your family or your partner is if you don't realize that what you're doing throughout your day is giving all of your attention to other people, right? What's left at the end?
Yeah. So when we're stressed, we tend to look inward, right? We're focusing on ourselves and we need instead to look outward to think about other people. Zoom is a challenge because Zoom calls are often scheduled back to back and there's no transition time and you go from one meeting to another. They're tiring and they're more tiring than physical meetings because with physical meetings, you have time for social interaction, informal interaction before the meetings begin. They're more spontaneous. There's more joking and laughter. There's also, it's easier to pay attention when you're in person. So they're less stressful. It's harder to pay attention in a Zoom meeting. And this is something that organizations have to participate in, is to allow time for good rest breaks. And they have to put that as part of their core values. This is what I argue. Having rest breaks for people is so important so that we really can pull ourselves out of this rat race that we're in throughout the day, and we can sit back and we can reflect and we can replenish and maybe go for a walk, maybe have a chat with somebody, maybe do some creative writing, but something to clear our heads and replenish us and reset us so that at the end of the day, we have time for other people, because there are carryover effects. The stress that we experience throughout the day carries over into our personal lives in the evening. And so we can't just stop work at, you know, 5 or 6 p.m. and then go home and expect that we will be rejuvenated. No, we have to think about rejuvenation throughout the day.
You're listening to Peace Talks Radio. I'm Jessica Tickton in conversation with Dr. Gloria Mark, author of the book Attention Span, A Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity.
You mentioned in your book the idea of internal disruptions or interruptions and external. Can you talk more about that, the difference between those types of breaks or interruptions?
Yeah. So first of all, one of the most surprising things I've found in my research is that people are about as likely to self-interrupt as they are to be interrupted from some external source, like a phone call, email notification, social media notification. People within themselves will interrupt. And there are a lot of reasons for it. Sometimes people, they interrupt because they have this urge to look something up, this urge to read something. But it's also habitual. And one of the things we found in our research was that when external interruptions go down, people begin to self-interrupt more. It's as though people want to maintain this pattern of interruption. And this says to me that interruptions are habitual and they're deeply ingrained, which means our short attention spans are also habitual and deeply ingrained. And so it's, you know, not so easy to, if we simply cut off external interruptions, we're going to keep interrupting ourselves, right? So we have to find other ways to improve our attention spans than simply turning off notifications, although that's a first step and it's really important to do that.
Speaking of the attention span, you had said that over the past 15 years, it has declined. And now we're at about 47 seconds that we spend on a screen. It's all generations. It's boomers, it's millennials, it's Gen X, it's, you know, Gen Z. What is that doing to our ability to be present?
It is affecting our ability to be present, because if you're changing your attention every 47 seconds, you're not able to deeply process anything, right? What instead is happening, we're just picking things up in short snippets, right? We're grabbing this with our attention, then we're switching, grabbing something else. And we're talking about on average, although the median length of time, that means the midpoint of our data, is 40 seconds, which is quite short. So we find that the faster people switch attention, the higher is their stress, right? Mm-hmm. There's this strong correlation between stress and attention shifting. We have found in other studies that interruptions actually cause stress, right? There's a causality there. One more thing I'll say is that when we switch our attention, our minds get fatigued. And there's a part of our mind, it's called executive function. And the job of that component is to filter out distractions and keep us on track. When the mind gets fatigued, executive function just can't do its job.
Can you speak a little bit about the different kinds of attention that we can have?
Yeah. So when I was researching attention, it occurred to me that attention is a lot more complicated than just this idea of you're focused or not focused. Because we can pay attention to something. Imagine that you're reading a difficult book or you're reading something inspiring. It requires a little bit of cognitive effort to be able to make sense of it. But at times, we can also pay attention to things that don't require much cognitive effort at all. Playing solitaire, playing a mindless game on the phone. And I don't want to denigrate playing mindless games. A lot of people do. Sometimes it can help settle our mind, but it doesn't require much attention. Social media, right? Scrolling through social media does not require cognitive resources, doesn't require effort. So we call that kind of attention rote attention. It's a label. So it's, you know, like when you play solitaire, it's paying attention without using a lot of effort. When we have to put in effort, I call that focused attention. And so there are these two dimensions that we need to think about when we're considering attention. How challenged are you and how engaged are you? When you're challenged and engaged, I call that focused attention. When you're engaged but not challenged, I call that rote attention. And if you're not challenged and not engaged, that's boredom. And if you're challenged and not engaged, I give that a label of frustration, like when I have a tech problem, you know, I force myself to be engaged and I'm just really challenged with it.
You're listening to Peace Talks Radio. I'm Jessica Tickton in conversation with Dr. Gloria Mark.
When I think about the conflict sometimes I get into with my teenagers, at the end of the day, they are just on their phone scrolling. And I think, isn't there something else you could do that's more productive or that's helpful? Having read your book, sometimes that's just a place for you to be able to unwind. However, when does that become a problem?
So it becomes too much when we can't pull away out of our own accord. Then it's problematic. Keep in mind that it's human to be distracted. Right? It's just natural for where if you take a walk, you're distracted by the environment around you. So it's fine to be distracted. It's human. The problem is when we can't pull ourselves out of that distraction. And so, you know, spending 3 minutes on scrolling through social media, in my view, is okay. It's not harmful. It's when it becomes longer and people cannot pull themselves out, when they have lost the self-regulation to be able to pull themselves out. And so it's important to think, instead of just saying, you know, get off your phone, and, you know, I have kids too, so, you know, I went through this. Think about a replacement. What can you replace that activity with that can be more fulfilling for them? So, for example, immersive reading is just a powerful replacement. And my kids were raised without TV. And so we got them into a habit of reading. So that, and they understood the experience of immersion in reading. Now, yeah, so let's replace immersion in a phone with immersion in reading, because it builds up a cognitive muscle to be able to focus better. And it also allows people to go slow and to learn to be reflective and to learn how to deliberate. And it also increases people's knowledge and wisdom because they can connect it to their existing store of knowledge. When you know, go through social media scrolling through, these are short snippets, and you're not really building on knowledge, and you're not coming away with that with any kind of deep fulfillment, whereas reading a book can, or interacting with other people, having a conversation is a great replacement. So there's a lot of ways that we can replace social media behavior.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to the multitasking? Can you talk a little bit more about why multitasking is not a great way to be productive?
Yeah, it hurts our performance. In our digital age, people tend to think of multitasking as a badge of honor to be able to do it. But it hurts our performance in three ways. First of all, people make more errors. But actually, let me back up and talk about what multitasking is. It's not doing two things in parallel, unless one of those things is automatic. So you can walk and text because walking is automatic until it stops being automatic because a car is is coming at you. Then you have to pay attention to that. Multitasking is actually shifting your attention rapidly among different activities. And these are two activities that require some amount of attention. And so people make more errors. That's been shown in decades of laboratory research, right? Number two is that there's a cost in switching attention in terms of time. It takes longer to do any single task as if you're switching among them, as opposed to just working on one through to the end. It's called monotasking. And then you stop when you get to a break point, and then you pick up some other task. But when you switch in the middle of doing a task, you lose your place. You end up doing redundant work. And your mind also has to do extra work because it has to retrieve what's called a schema of the next task. A schema is the information or the plan that we need to do the task. Even if it seems like a trivial task, we still need to retrieve that schema. And continually retrieving that schema, it takes time and it takes effort. And the third reason why multitasking is bad is because it increases stress. And there are lab studies that show blood pressure rises. There's a physiological marker that indicates people are more stressed. In our studies, we find that people are more stressed. We've had them wear heart rate monitors so we can actually, you know, detect when people's attention is shifting and what happens with their stress. And of course, people subjectively report more stress. So more errors, longer time, higher stress. Not a good idea to multitask.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you see as a kind of, I don't know if it's bright light, but, you know, as you look ahead to the future in our digital lives, what do you think about when you look ahead as something? Dare you posit? Are you sort of feeling hopeful about it, or are you feeling a little more scared about it?
So I'm an optimist by nature, and I am optimistic because I think a lot of people want change. So a lot of people are looking for ways to change their behaviors. And to me, that's very, very optimistic. And it takes time. We can't do it overnight. We can't do it as individuals. We need to have a collective effort. We need organizations to cooperate. For example, I would like to see organizations providing quiet time to employees every day as part of their core values. This should be scheduled into every employee's workday so that we're, you know, it's a chance to de-stress so that we don't carry our stress home with us. And I think slowly, organizations are starting to realize the effects of burnout. And how burnout can really, it harms the organization's productivity and performance. And when people are positive and have better well-being, they perform better. They can be better engaged and motivated. And the same in our lives. So, you know, I'm hopeful that organizations will be able to make changes that can alleviate burdens of email and workload on people, provide quiet time, and also that people in their own lives will realize that they can do things that can inspire them instead of spending time on social media, binge watching. I don't want to, you know, condemn binge watching TV. Everybody does it. It has a purpose. Sometimes we just need to do it to unwind. But there are also other ways we can spend our time as well. And I think people will slowly begin to realize the benefits of doing that.
Mm-hmm. And is there any last piece of advice or anything new you're working on that you'd want to share with our audience?
Well, I would say that we need a sea change in our culture. And it's something that we all have to participate in. And of course, there needs to be better policy, tech regulations. But I also want to emphasize that we know from research that even though we turn off notifications and algorithms are not affecting us, that people still have short attention spans. And to address this cultural change, we have to do it as individuals. We have to, for example, practicing meta-awareness is one way to build up our stamina and help us reflect and understand ourselves better. We need to do it at an organizational level to be able to give employees permission to be able to spend quiet time to de-stress, and on a societal level as well. And this, there are many, many things in terms of policy that can change. I'm a big believer in banning cell phones in schools. That's one example. I think that's very positive. I think that there will be cultural change because we've swung the pendulum too far in one direction. You know, we've been so eager and in love with our digital world that we haven't come up for air to see what the consequences are. And we're starting to come up for air. And so now we have to think about moving the pendulum back so that we can have more of a balanced life. And that's the subtitle of my book, is about achieving a balance.
That was Gloria Mark, professor of computer science at UC Irvine and author of Attention Span, A Groundbreaking Way to Restore Balance, Happiness, and Productivity. Her work reminds us that the pursuit of peace isn't only about resolving external conflict. It also means learning how to create stillness and focus within ourselves. To learn more about Dr. Gloria Mark, go to peacetalksradio.com, where you'll find links to her work. That's where you can go to hear all our programs in our series dating back to 2002. You can read and share transcripts and sign up for our podcast. You can also make a donation to keep this nonprofit program going into the future at peacetalksradio.com. Coming up in the second part of the program, we asked students how they handle conflict. Their answers? Honest, wise, and sometimes hilarious. Stay tuned to find out. Back in a moment. voices we don't always hear in conversations about conflict resolution, young people.
Peace means no big arguments and everybody's happy.
Just being calm and peaceful.
I think peace means no fighting. You can be yourself without being judged, and you don't have the fear of being interrupted or being bullied.
Also, high school students who are members of their model UN.
Maybe instead of trying to be the loudest person in the room, I'll try and just sit back, listen, and then maybe see if we become a collective working to the goal rather than just trying to like further our own initiative.
It just kind of like, Model UN really helped me be more receptive towards the other person is saying and more malleable when it comes to like compromises. I mean, nobody's supposed to be happy with a good compromise, right?
Coming up today on Peace Talks Radio, Youth Voices on Peace. This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Whether it's the search for inner peace, harmony in our closest relationships, or understanding in our workplaces, schools, neighborhoods, and beyond, we explore it here on Peace Talks Radio. From personal moments to global movements, we consider what it takes to build a more peaceful world. I'm Jessica Tickton. On this episode of Peace Talks Radio, we talk with fourth graders who are just beginning to think about what peace means in their lives, and high school students deeply engaged in diplomacy and global problem solving through their Model United Nations program. We also hear from a classroom teacher who shares how she manages conflict among students day to day, helping them learn empathy, accountability, and repair. What can we learn about peace at school, at home, and in the world when we listen to the next generation? When we ask kids about conflict, they remind us that emotions, misunderstandings, and trust are all part of relationships, and peace often begins with a conversation. I visited a fourth grade classroom in Burlington, Vermont. After a spirited discussion about what peace means to them, these young people gathered in groups of friends. I was then able to go a little deeper into asking them about some of their conflict resolution strategies. Here's what a group of four 10-year-old girls had to say.
Within your friendship, do you guys have any conflict?
Yes.
I gotta say a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm not gonna say names, but we were supposed to write this report and it was a misunderstanding, I'm pretty sure, but some people spread some rumors about somebody's report and it made this somebody feel sort of bad.
I talked to that person at the end of the day who felt hurt and we talked it through. And I said, I'm sorry, it was a misunderstanding. I apologize. And,
yeah. Well, I did the same thing, and I also told them how it hurt my feelings.
My strategy is taking space if I'm the one who's being hurt, or if the person who is hurt, if they like clearly ask to have space, I'm just gonna give it to them, because that's what they asked, and we should respect that.
So one thing is to give space, another thing is to talk it through, another thing was, you said, saying sorry. What else?
Maybe also talking to the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Talking to an adult to help you resolve it.
Make sure it's a trusted adult.
Why do you think you said there's so much drama? What do you think, Sonoma? What do you think that there's a lot of stuff going on? Even if you're not always a part of it, why do you think there's a lot going on?
There's a lot of misunderstandings.
I think we fight a lot about not important things, but it just makes us a little bit angry about the tiniest things, and then we make it into a fight just because we felt hurt about that one little thing.
So it sounds like it's easy for your feelings to be hurt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And also especially if you're like going through a hard time, like all those feelings, if like you haven't let them go yet, it like adds to the hurricane, and then sometimes the hurricane has to rain and it just all rains out at the one time when they made you feel really angry.
Mm-hmm. So it's about managing our feelings, it sounds like, right? You all have feelings. Sometimes it's about something not related at all to the thing that's going on, but
yeah. And then
but it's also like that.
And then you might, by mistake, like, take it out on the person who hurt you, but also, it there was another thing that was unrelated to them and you by mistake took it out.
These fourth graders illustrate that even the youngest members of our community are learning the tools of peace. Listening, taking space, apologizing, and being honest about their emotions. This is Peace Talks Radio. I'm Jessica Ticton, talking to young people about peace. While the girls reflected on how misunderstandings and hurt feelings can build up, sometimes requiring space, apologies, and honest conversations to repair, for other students, peace building can sometimes be as simple and quick as a game of chance, like rock, paper, scissors. I went to speak with a group of 9 and 10-year-old boys whose approach to conflict was a little bit different. Whether it's wrestling with siblings or arguing over whose turn it is, they offer their own tools for sorting things out and then moving on. From rock, paper, scissors to the art of compromise, these boys are already tapping into the fundamentals of conflict resolution, communication, fairness, and creativity.
All right, so you guys are friends, right?
Yeah.
So do you guys feel like you get along well?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes.
Like, yeah, no,
we play fight sometimes.
Yeah.
Like sometimes.
But
sometimes.
It's like for like.
Bag ball.
What are the arguments like around friends, like the things that come up between you that make you get upset?
Well, we argue about who wins games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Oh, yeah. But then, who wins the game? Yeah.
And then, like. But it doesn't last long. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't
like,
last
the next
long.
Day, like an hour later, we're all just like friends again.
Later, yeah.
What are the things like, that make you actually feel angry?
There's not really anything that makes us that angry.
Yeah.
I can get super angry if like someone like if like someone's like cheating a lot and like saying they're winning. Kind of,
So if someone were to break your trust, would that make you feel?
Well, like, we'd probably be friends again later, like, the day.
Yeah.
I'd probably, like, forget about it.
Yeah, me too.
I'd probably, like, forgive them, too.
How does it feel when you forgive somebody?
Good, because then they can start being your friend, and you don't have to be, like, trying, like, even though they are your friend, you don't have to be, like, pretending you hate them.
It sounds like you guys have some tools that you've learned, like, even in this classroom, like, when things don't maybe go your way, or you feel like you want something you're not getting. What are the strategies you use right away to try to like make a case?
Rock, paper, scissors? Yeah, we do that a lot to see who goes down the wet slide.
Oh yeah, we did that today.
Or sometimes we're just like both, like if we can both do it, we'll both do it.
Oh, yeah.
So then like you don't have to fight.
And what about like at home when you, let's say with siblings sometimes that can be more intense. Do your parents have strategies they use to help you guys sort out arguments with siblings?
Well,
my parents
usually
just stop us.
My
just
parents
say stop.
Don't
stop.
Really stop us when we're fighting, so they can get in. They can turn into really big fights from just like over a little thing, like
if you stepped on somebody else's cardboard.
Yeah.
Stable.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, usually, like I don't fight. But then my brother fights, and then I have no choice but to fight.
Well, sometimes when I'm home and I'm bored, I just try to annoy my sister.
Same.
Yeah. She kind of just runs away, so we never really get in fights.
Well, sometimes, like, me and my brother fight for fun. Like, we aren't angry at each other, but we just start, like, fighting on the couch.
Yeah, me and my brothers do, like, daily wrestles.
We're, like, wrestling.
So what advice would you have for people who are in an argument and need to sort it out? What kind of tools would you
have? Well, figure out what you both want, and then you can see if you can get something that's, like, in the middle of what you both want.
Try to make a compromise.
Yeah. What do you guys suggest?
Rock, paper, scissors, or try to make a compromise or something like that.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to take it global. What do you think could help us have more peace in the world? Could, like leaders or politicians or people in positions of power, what could they do to help make more peace?
They could make it fair for, like, everyone, and everyone gets the same, not some people get more and some people get less.
Well, they could make it so that, like, if you feel like you're getting mad, you should probably just, like, take a deep breath or something.
Yeah.
Even when the wrestling gets rowdy, there's a foundation of connection between these boys and a growing awareness that peace isn't just about avoiding conflict, but about finding ways through it together. This is Peace Talks Radio. I'm Jessica Tickton. Today's episode features youth voices on peace. Creating a classroom isn't always easy. In a time when many young people feel disconnected, one elementary school teacher is building something different, a classroom rooted in respect, belonging, and shared ownership. Dani Banky doesn't just teach academics. She helps kids learn how to listen, support each other, and grow into thoughtful citizens. In my conversation with her, we hear how she cultivates peace, one circle, one conversation, and relationship at a time.
That sense of belonging and sense of community aspect is at the heart of my teaching philosophy. I got very lucky with this group. They are an exceptional group of kiddos, but as far as really blending and coming together as a community, it definitely didn't just happen. We do circle every morning. I just think it's a really beautiful way to start the day together. And sometimes we'll end the day with a quick closing circle as well, being something as simple as what made you smile today or what were you grateful for today. And the most special part of that is that there's a little bit of energy and chatter or excitement sometimes, but for the most part, they're able to fully listen to each other, making eye contact and listening to their peers about how their weekend went or something that exciting that's going on in their life. They genuinely respect each other in a way that I've never seen before.
How do you like foster that kind of respect in the class aside from like circle time? How do you as the teacher help them give them tools?
I never want to be seen as like the person who has the power in the class, and I think that's also a little progressive, but I never want to be punitive. I never want it to be like, this is my classroom. I opened the year saying this is our classroom. And we even made a contract together. I didn't give them expectations. We created them together. So that creation of a community as students and an adult brought us almost on an equal playing field where they know I respect them. And then in return, they respect me. It's like all based on just having authentic love for them. Like they know that at the end of the day, I'm here for them. Whatever they need, they can trust me. I'm not here to tell them how to live their lives. I want them to explore the classroom themselves and explore their learning independently.
Dani says she's always learning from her students as well.
Really young people, they're not even preteens yet. They know a lot more about the world than adults expect them to or think they do. And that's a huge part of my practice as well, is engaging in criticality. We do that with a lot of anti-racist work together. And that has been, especially in our political climate this year, has been so healing for me, honestly, because in a time when we might be losing hope in the future of our country, I'm able to look at the future every day and be like, oh, you are all amazing humans. And I actually feel like it's going to be okay. And that really just comes from them showing up every day and being excited to be here and to engage in whatever the work is for that day.
When do you feel like your class is most cohesive, when they're all really kind of in this zone together?
There's two different spaces where I see that. There's like the playful space, something as simple as, you know, sharks and minnows outside.
If you aren't familiar with this game, like I wasn't, I asked one fourth grader, Mabel, to explain it to me.
Sharks and Minnows is a game where there are two people who are the sharks and a lot of other people who try to run from side to side without getting tagged. And if you get tagged by one of the sharks, you become seaweed, and you have to try to tag other people, but while standing in the same spot.
And your teacher says that this is a game where she finds your whole class is really into it, and she calls it cohesive. Do you know what that means?
No.
It means that you all come together.
Well, a lot of people just like running and like doing that activity, and then doing it together just like brings us together more.
This is Peace Talks Radio. I'm Jessica Tickton. Today we're talking to youth about peace. We are also speaking with Dani Banky, a fourth grade teacher, about how she cultivates peace and a sense of belonging in her classroom.
And then there's that academic space where if we're in like a pretty intense class discussion, we do a lot of like Socratic seminar-esque class discussions that are related to the real world. Those are really when I see their true selves come out. It can be someone being like really opinionated, or it can be someone questioning another person, but it's like those real life skills where I'm seeing them come together as a class, as a community, and bounce off of each other's thoughts and ideas. And that's what I really love most, honestly, is like getting to witness that collective thinking happening.
Something that struck me when I was talking to these kids is how much love they have for each other. They really seem to care about each other. I was really struck with their willingness to quickly forgive mm-hmm. and to move on after conflicts because they just want to be together.
I feel like with this group in particular, if there is any emotional harm done by anyone in the class, to anyone in the class, it is addressed as a class. I do not, for the most part, unless it's like private, I do not address it with just the kid who did the harm or the kid who the harm was done to. We address it all together. This just happened a few weeks ago, and it was some kiddo felt, he had verbalized to me, like, everyone hates me. And that, you know, that's like full stop. We had a circle, and I let that other kid take a break and calm down because they were very heightened. And I had talked to the class before he had come back in and said, this is not acceptable. A member of our community does not feel loved or welcomed here. That is not how we do things, and you all know that. And he's really upset, and so I'm really upset. It doesn't just affect him, it affects me, and it affects our community, and we need to all feel safe here. And when the kiddo came back in, they were super apologetic. They welcomed him with open arms. They reassured him that he is loved and he is welcomed, and it was resolved, right? But
nice. Did they follow that up? But did you see following that up with action in the coming days?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then we also, after we had kind of, you know, resolved and had a closing conversation with him there, we went out and played a game all together, and like it was like everything was fine, right? And they were being extra, I think, mindful of engaging with him and making sure he felt extra part of the game, right? And that's really what I love about this age group that you wouldn't really see with middle or high school, where they just want to resolve things so that they can be together. And that's really where the peace comes in. It's like they value the idea of peace in a way that adults maybe don't as much so as we should, which is what we are here for. And I think something really important to me is like modeling peaceful and healthy relationships with adults. My special educator, Allie, she's amazing, and her and I have such a beautiful relationship. And the kids notice that, and they see that. I love doing closing circle because it just ends the day on a really good note as well, even if it's like a 5-minute check-in where we can just be like, what was something that you were grateful for today? Practicing that gratitude, because that brings me peace. Like, I do that with my partner every night before bed. We're like, what were you grateful for today? Because it really resets kind of just like where you are and where you're going for the next day, right? It kind of just resets you. I love doing that with them, because sometimes the answers are outrageous, but sometimes they're really wholesome and really sweet and just a simple like, you, like, thank you. And it's, you know, sometimes this job can be a little thankless. So something as simple as that, it really fills your cup up. It means a lot.
That was Dani Banky, a fourth grade teacher in Burlington, Vermont. Today we're talking with youth about their thoughts on peace. Now we hear from high school students who are learning to navigate conflict, not just in international diplomacy simulations, but in their everyday lives. through their involvement in the Model United Nations, these young peace builders are gaining skills in listening, compromise, and emotional regulation. I was lucky enough to be welcomed into this classroom after school one day when there were a handful of students hanging around chatting with each other.
I think that people often have sort of a tendency when in conflict situations to listen to other people but only be engaging in the conversation to speak. You know, they're engaging and just waiting to say what they have to say. And I feel like Model UN taught me to sort of listen to what other, it sounds sort of shallow, but like, you know, listen to what other people are saying and listen because they want to be understood too. So I feel like Model UN taught me in a broader sense how to listen to other people's perspectives in a healthier way.
And I think two like main things, similar to what Rose said, where you have to like, one of them is it teaches you how to respond and like argue in like a respectful way and still be conscious of their opinions and see the argument from multiple perspectives and then work to solve it and not just work to like win the argument.
I think a lot of people end up very rigid in how they see the solution or just how they see the structure of debate happening within Model UN. And I mean, it kind of happens to be the people who are the loudest, who try to lead the most, end up having a very narrow perspective on how the resolution paper is supposed to look, which is just the final paper that is the result of Model UN. What I've learned is that we need to be a lot more relaxed. Like, the world's not going to end. Everybody here is speaking very informally, and sure, there are formalities most of the time. What I've learned is just to kind of relax a bit and be a bit more squishy in terms of my argument.
One of the most important skills that I've learned, and probably that I didn't start with when I first began Model UN, was mediation and knowing how to sit in a room because with people who are very opinionated, very smart, you know, who want to get their like opinions out, who want to speak. There's also awards that you get during conference, so people want to get those as well. And I mean, it's just a lot of commotion oftentimes, a lot of shouting sometimes as well. And what I've learned is how to, as someone who also likes to shout and voice their opinion, I've learned how to sit back and be like, you know what, maybe instead of trying to be the loudest person in the room, I'll try and just sit back, listen, and then maybe see if we can work together and become a collective working to the goal rather than just trying to like further our own initiative. I think that's really important.
I was impressed with their insights and their willingness to hear new and different perspectives. It was refreshing to hear how they led with kindness and respect. I asked them, if you could give advice to our world leaders, what would you say?
I feel like we need to get out of our echo chambers. I learned about this a lot, especially because I did this NSLC program. And it's National Student Leadership Council. I did an international relations program for about 9 days. And I met kids from all over the country, and even all over the world. Like, I have friends now who live in Brazil, which is really cool. But I learned to be more open-minded because they had some of the same like core values as me and just the morals were the same. They might have felt differently about politics. And so it really made me open my mind and just listen to what they were saying. And I feel like it was really important because now I'm much more open-minded when I talk to new people. I feel like especially in Vermont, we live in such a bubble because almost everyone has the same political beliefs. And I love that I grew up here, and I think it's important to get out there and hear other people's opinions, and it makes you think of things you maybe wouldn't have thought of before.
I would just say to chill out a little bit, honestly. I mean, less in a physical way or an emotional way, but just people are very rigid in their what they believe. And it's fine to believe in something, but I mean, just because you believe in something doesn't mean that the other guy has to. Even if that other guy might be wrong in your opinion, they can be wrong and you can just agree to disagree. But I mean, people are just looking for reasons to get mad at other people because they fundamentally have differences. Maybe this isn't as serious as it needs to be, and maybe this isn't as pressing as it needs to be, and maybe you can live without them agreeing with you.
I think that this is going to sound really cringy, but I just think that we all need to be kinder to each other.
I think a lot of like the root of these issues that the world is facing and also our country is that we're so polarized in opinions and in beliefs, but are we actually, if that makes sense? I think to at least some extent, we're all just like going about our lives. I mean, we all have problems that like aren't as big as like world hunger, you know, but are just very important to us no matter what. And I think that just like we need to understand that we're all just people. And even though that one person has a slightly different belief than me, that doesn't make them a bad person. I mean, maybe that just means I need to like kind of change my perspective and understand where they're coming from. And I think a lot of people have been talking about like open-mindedness. I think it's exactly what we need to do. And just not only be like open to other people's ideas, but also respectful of them. And maybe like, okay, if I want to live in a world where what I believe in exists, maybe that means I need to like, you know, also have that world be one that you enjoy as well. And you also want to live there and you have your beliefs as well. And I think it's just about like being more respectful and kind to each other.
I think there are very few cases where disagreement warrants disrespect. And I just think that if you are having a conversation with someone, you're having the conversation with them to understand each other and hopefully reach some sort of common goal. And if you're doing that without any sort of respect for them as a person or their beliefs, even if you disagree, then it's not going to be a productive conversation. So.
Then we ended with a lively discussion with the question, when do you feel most at peace?
A lot of summers we get to go to Maine and swim in the ocean. It's just, it's really peaceful. It's, you just float on your back in the ocean and like in a little cove and there aren't any waves bothering you and you're just kind of swaying back and forth.
I think I'm most at peace whenever I'm in nature, swimming, I don't know, just going for a run, like I'm outside, the weather's nice, I'm skiing. Whenever I'm like outside, not like using my brain, if that makes sense.
I feel most at peace when I don't have any emotional burdens or responsibilities at that time. To connect back to what we were talking about before, conflict resolution, I think if more people understood how to effectively resolve conflict and carry their own emotional burdens and not make other people do it for them, it would take the pressure off of individuals, more peace.
So if we can start with peace, where when we feel at peace, right? I mean, it's sort of going back to what you were saying. When you can be more relaxed, you can engage with others, you can listen, you can be a little bit more open and porous instead of rigid, right?
Yeah. For me, it's like getting everything done is when I can be at peace. Like when there's nothing that needs to be done.
I'd say I'm most at peace when I'm building community or connections, whether it's somebody I've never met before and I'm learning about what they've been through, or I'm out on a hike and I'm outside connecting with nature. I think there's just something, I just love it. I think it's so peaceful.
That was a group of high school students in Burlington, Vermont. Through their involvement in the Model UN, these teens are learning how to hear beneath the shouting and how to help others feel seen and respected. Earlier in this segment, we heard from students in a fourth grade classroom, as well as their teacher, Danny Benke. And on the first part of the program, we talked about finding peace in a digital world with Dr. Gloria Mark, author of Attention Span, a groundbreaking way to restore balance, happiness, and productivity. Hear the full conversation or read the transcript at peacetalksradio.com. There's also a donate button for you to contribute to this nonprofit work. Support comes from listeners like you. Support, too, from KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Nola Davis-Moses is our executive director. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. For co-founders Paul Ingalls and Suzanne Kreider, I'm Jessica Tickton. Thanks so much for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.